The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies.
Welcome to this edition of Century of Lies. Today, our guest will be Senator Pierre-Claude Nolan. He is the chair of a Senate, Canadian Senate committee who issued a couple of reports about 2 years ago indicating that they wanted to regulate the distribution of marijuana and to change the policy of prohibition towards other drugs. He just returned from a trip to Kabul, Afghanistan, to attend an international symposium on drugs. And I want to welcome him to the show, Senator Pierre-Claude Nolan. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Dean.
Good afternoon, sir. This change in policy seems to be taking place worldwide. People are beginning to look at the facts instead of the hysteria. Tell us quickly, if you will, about the report that your committee issued.
Well, it's basically a recognition that the war on drugs is not effective. We are recommending the change of the global paradigm on because cannabis needs to be of a concern for the people, Canadians. But we need to change how do we approach the concern we have towards the substance. We came to the conclusion that it's not all use that are of a concern, should be of a concern to other than the user. The state should focus. When we use the word the state, it means the government need to focus on the abusive use of the substance, the dangerous use of it, not the recreational use, but we need to prevent the excessive use of the substance. And we had various recommendations on how to change that approach from a criminal approach to a more public health concern.
Well, we'll probably come back to that in a little bit, learn more about the Canadian situation and what's going on up that way. But first, sir, tell us about your trip to Kabul. What was that like?
Well, there was an international symposium on drugs. As you know, and many of your auditor knows, Afghanistan is the main producer, international producer of opiates. I should say illegal opiates. They are producing roughly 80, almost 90% of all the illegal opium that around the world, and it's an illegal production. And it's totally in the end of the warlords and the traffickers, and it is also the most important business in the country. Almost 60% of the GDP of Afghanistan is under that item. Basically, I am suggesting, and I'm not the only one, the Sandless Council, which is an international body who looks after the reform of drug policies. We came to with a recommendation to start a feasibility study to transform the illegal crop of poppy into a legal crop of poppy. Why so? Because 80% of the population does not have access to only 20% of the opiate, medicinal opiates, morphine, codeine, all those various medicine that we use or are given to us when we're in the hospital, because it's a major and it's a very good painkiller. Us in North America and Western Europe and Australia and New Zealand, Japan, we form roughly 20% of the global population, but we use 80% of the legal production. So we are proposing to offer to the developing country a source of legal opiates, at the same achieving that, we would change the illegal business in Afghanistan and change that for a legitimate and important business.
Well, Senator Nolan, they tell me that Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, many other terrorist organizations make money by growing these flowers and turning them into gold to buy weapons to kill us.
Definitely. You're right on. That's why it's important. That's why we're there as a coalition. And when we moved in Afghanistan 3 years ago, we've promised change, democracy, a bright future. The task is huge, but if we're serious, it's not by eradication of poppy crops that we're going to achieve that. It is the main source of revenue in the country, so we cannot demolish that. But we need to change the process. We need to change the outcome of that important crop.
Yes, sir. As I understand it, as you say, 80 to 90% of the world's opium comes from Afghanistan.
Exactly.
And these people, were we to take away that ability to grow this crop, it would devastate their economy. There is a better way, as you say, to provide for legal purchase of their crop.
Yes, we can dream, you and I can dream today from now to tomorrow morning that they can grow roses or saffron or all the other types of crop. But they're good at growing poppies. We need to help those people. We have promised them that we would do it. So let's do it.
Yes, sir. While you were in Afghanistan, did you see any instances of fighting, or did you get a chance to visit any of the opium farms?
No, I was only there for 2 days, and the farms are outside Kabul, and it was, even though I would have liked to do it, it was all the security measures that were taken to protect the various international quote-unquote visitors. It was impossible for us to go outside the basically the cars that we were in. There was a little bit of demonstrations in the streets, and even the word street, it's a large word. You and I have an understanding of what's a street over there. It's not a street. There's no asphalt. But there was demonstration. One guy was killed one night when we were there. But it was business as usual.
Yes, sir. indeed. This drug war eats up an enormous part of not only the Canadian economy, but certainly the U.S. economy, the $50 billion a year, some say.
Yep.
And we could reinvest that towards treatment when necessary and towards education, which would help people to get out of that economic situation, which usually draws them into drug use.
Well, you've put the proper challenge for a serious government, any serious government, is to invest in education. A government should help people make proper decisions. But it for us, it's totally against any ethical reasoning to allow any government to take a decision for anybody else. They should support decision making, proper decision making by their citizens. But at the end of the day, it's the citizen who will take his decision. So government needs to educate the population on the various substances. And at the end of the day, the population will decide what they want to do.
Yes, sir. Now, I want to talk about North America a bit.
Yep.
It seems to me that the American Drug Enforcement Administration is making a fairly significant splash, is involved in the justice system in your nation. and I don't know if this is thin ice, you can't skate on here, but I see where the instance of Mr. Mark Emery being busted for selling seeds to American, egged on by the Drug Enforcement Administration. And most recently, a Mr. Steve Tuck dragged from a hospital emergency room to a jail in the United States for providing seeds to the nation of Canada. And your thoughts, sir?
Well, of course, Mr. Emery's case is under in front of the court. I'm following that very closely. Your government is trying to extradite Mr. Emery. It's going to be up to the court in Canada to decide if they agree to that. There's a strong opposition in Canada to such an extradition for all kinds of valid legal reasons. One being the comparison between the sanctions in your country and in Canada, and only on that courts will look at the demand from the U.S. government with a lot of scrutiny. That being said, you will understand that I don't want to go public with my opinion on that.
And I understand, sir.
I'm a parliamentarian in Ottawa, and I think it would be not proper for me to voice my opinion on that.
And I understand. I appreciate it, sir. I want to ask you your thoughts on the decrim bill in Canada that's been put forward and retracted and put forward and retracted. And there was some talk. There was the families of the four RCMP officers who had come out saying that we needed more drug war, that Canada needed to become a bit more like the United States in their draconian methods.
Well, you're raising many questions, but let's start with the decrim bill. It can surprise you, but I'm not supporting that bill. It's not a good bill. It's a false solution. It's not a bill that is. It is a bill that maintain as the driving force prohibition, and I prefer to keep the bad law that we already have and that we know than to adopt a bad law that we don't know. There's a reason why the bill, it keeps coming back and forth, and it's still in front of a committee of the House of Commons, which is the lower house of our parliament, and because they know it's a bad bill. It was introduced as purely a political maneuver. The minister at the time used the word decriminalization, but it's not the decriminalization. It's a change of judicial mechanism, and instead of a real decriminalization, as we use the word in Europe.
Yes, sir. I want to talk about your report on cannabis in particular.
Yep.
You demystify some of the myths in your report. And,
yep.
And I monitor the news rather closely in this regard, and I see reports in the last few days talking about the Jamaican
ganja
parliamentary commission down there has issued their report, and again recommending decrim for all small amounts, and basically to leave people alone as long as they're doing it in their house.
Well, you're using the word decrim in the right proposition. That's why I'm making the difference between what our government is using when they're using the word decrim and the real decriminalization. Decriminalization is don't use criminal process to face a social phenomenon. That is what all our reports, various reports, Europe, Canada, Jamaica, U.S. in the early 70s, because we came to the conclusion that we cannot face an important phenomenon with the criminal justice system. It does not work. No matter what amount of money your government, my government, is investing in that war, it will fail. It will fail. The dynamic of consumption and the pattern of use does not respond to any public policy where prohibition is the driving force behind the policy. We've studied many countries, including yours, France, Sweden, Australia, Italy, Spain, in none of those countries, when you're using prohibition as the driving mechanism, driving force, the policy work. It always fails.
Yes, sir, and you bring up an important point. Whenever there's talk of change to the laws, there's always talk, oh, well, we need another report. We need another study. We need to look at this. But we can reach back, as you say, to the 1970s, the Schaefer report here, the Ladain report in Canada, another one in Holland, and they were the only one who went with the recommendations at that time. But there have been sufficient studies. The analysis has been done, and the reports are there. All we need to do is look at the Canadian Senate report as an example.
Dean, one thing that your auditors needs to really capture as an important, let's say, deadline. Some of you and me and some of your editor will remember that in 1998, in a rare moment of total stupidity, our leaders, heads of states, met in New York in a special meeting of the UN, United Nations. And they decided that they would, within 10 years, eradicate from the surface of the world poppy, coca leaf, and cannabis. You remember that?
Yes, sir.
So the 10-year comes up in 2 years. We must make sure that, thank God, none of those heads of state at that time are still around. So it's a brand new slate of people. They must tackle the problem, the situation, and because the pressure from the population in Europe is there. The pressure from the population in Canada is there. And I'm quite convinced that the pressure from the population in the U.S. is there. The pressure is there in Australia. The Western, the so-called developed world is population is pushing for a change in the paradigm. I'm not suggesting that they should say, okay, any government, there's no more involvement of the state in the drug situation. But we must change our approach. The pressure is there, and we must maintain that pressure, because in 2008, I don't want that deadline to pass by without notice.
Well, sir, what you're saying is very reminiscent of what's been said many times here in the States by various presidents and congressional leaders, that there's a new 5-year plan, that we will reduce it by 50%, 25%. And yet, it to me, it echoes. It's like the Soviet 5-year plans or something.
You know what? I think they're in good faith when they're saying that. I remember having, when I was writing the report, I had a dinner with John Walters. Your John Walter.
Drug czar.
Exactly.
Yes, sir.
In Ottawa. Mr. Walters and many people in your country, like in my country, are very they're in good faith. For them, it's morally wrong. So the approach is totally different. It's not a health problem. It's basically a moral problem. And they are convinced that they can use the arm of the law to impose what they think is morally good. Again, something which is, for them, morally wrong. I don't agree with that. And I told that to Mr. Walters, and my approach is built around a pure health, public health situation. I have concerns, but I'm not concerned by all use of any substance. I am concerned by the excessive use of any substance. That includes tobacco and booze.
Yes, sir.
By the way.
Yes, sir. My only encounter with Mr. Walters, I was at a gathering where he gave a speech last year, and I approached him, tried to offer my business cards. His guards gathered around him, and he left the building without saying a word.
Well, it took me, I must be honest with you, it took us in Ottawa many calls and phone calls and requests at your embassy in Ottawa to finally been able to have Mr. Walters in Ottawa for a dinner. But it was a very good exchange of views, and he really understand where we're coming from and why we're doing what we're doing. He does not agree, but at least we have accept to understand to exchange. We've surrounded the problem.
Yes, sir. Well, and it's good that he got to meet someone as knowledgeable as you and perhaps absorb some of what you had to say. I want to point folks to website where they can read this report. I actually have a link on my website now. It's at drugtruth.net. Upper left side, in the middle there for Century of Lies is a link to the Canadian Senate report. And I would urge folks to go there. It speaks from great logic, scientific fact and analysis. And, I think proves the point.
Well, it's important. Those who will accept to spend a few hours to read that, thank God, I think it's a must. They will see that we have studied at length the guiding principle that should inform or support a drug policy, and those principles are important, and they put in the right position the use of the criminal law. The right use of ethical attitude from government and people, the role of the science, role of governance, public governance. So the study that we have done was thorough and was rigorous. So good reading.
Yes, sir. Now, you have attended some of the ongoing conferences in some of the major cities, Vancouver, Seattle.
There's going to be one in Seattle, by the way, in December, at the end of November.
Yes, sir, and this is a chance for the people who've spent time investigating this, people with stature and acumen, to share information to perhaps carve out a new method of going forward on the policy of drug reform.
I think it's important for people, ordinary people, to inform themselves on the subject. They have an opinion. Like in Canada, in the U.S., everybody have an opinion on that. Now it's important that they have an informed opinion on the subject.
Yes, sir. Absolutely right. Well, the Senator Nolan, I thank you so much. I look forward to our next encounter.
Dean, it's always a pleasure.
And I admire
you. And my offer to travel to Houston is still on.
Well, we will try to coordinate that as soon as possible, because I think it'd be wonderful for the local officials to hear what you have to say.
Thank you very much, Dean.
Thank you, Senator Nolan.
Bye-bye. Identify this jurisdiction by its drug laws. U.S. dollars and strong-arm tactics ensure that this nation leads the world in the production of opium. A former drug lord now occupies the National Office of Drug Czar, in control of the production of billions of opium poppies. This commerce provides financial support for the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and numerous other terrorist organizations. Deemed to be a great ally of the United States in the 90-year war on drugs, this is Afghanistan.
This is Cliff Thornton for the Drug Truth Network. Today I want to talk about Bill Bennett, a prominent right-wing blowhard who has recently come under intense fire for remarks he made on September 28th on his radio show when he says, "I do know that it's true that if one wanted to reduce crime, you could abort every black baby in this country." He quickly backed away from the proposition, saying that would be an impossible, ridiculous, and morally reprehensible thing to do. But your crime rate would go down. You know, it's really unfortunate that Bennett chose to be so politically correct, because I think he may be onto something here. He's just wrong about the target. If we really want to get tough on crime, it's the white babies who should start getting coat hanger treatment. Consider the fact that whites commit 3 times as many violent crimes as blacks every year, just in raw numbers. That is just for ordinary street crimes, such as assault. The numbers become skewed out of the world when you consider white collar crimes. Typically, the collar isn't the only thing that's white. For instance, job-related accidents and illnesses claimed the lives of 70,000 Americans in 1992, a significant portion of which can be chalked up to white employers neglecting to comply with the occupational health and safety laws. According to the studies, up to 64,000 die every year due to pollution and other environmental hazards produced by the industry. We should also not forget the ravages of white-owned healthcare system and insurance industry. Around 18,000 adults are killed every year as a result of the lack of medical coverage. Over 25,000 die as a result of unnecessary prescriptions and surgeries performed by mostly white doctors. All in all, corporate criminals take about 10 times as many lives as street criminals. And I haven't even mentioned the white men who control the apparatus of the state, which through war sanctions and other means kills hundreds of thousands, if not millions more. Over 100,000 civilians have died in Iraq alone. Now, when you start to look at this and understand that whites are twice as likely as blacks to drive drunk, resulting in over 10,000 deaths every year, the same trend can be seen when considering drug use in general. Contrary to popular belief, whites make up 74% of illegal drug users, whereas only 14% are black. Whites make up a majority of drug dealers as well. So when you're looking at what Bill Bennett said, let's tell the truth. This is Cliff Thornton for the Drug Truth Network.
Senator Nolan was speaking earlier about conferences, and there is one coming up October 21st and 22nd in Hartford, Connecticut. If you up there in the Northeast would like to be part of it, please go to Cliff's website, efficacy-online.org.
I'm Jack Cole. I'm the executive director of LEAP, or Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, retired New Jersey State Police lieutenant, and 26 years there and 14 years undercover in narcotics.
Jack, there's quite a few locales, states, and cities looking at their drug laws. There's one coming up in just a week on the 21st in Hartford, Connecticut. Tell us what those are like and what they may accomplish.
Well, the two-day seminar that's coming up in Hartford on the 21st and 22nd of this month is actually sponsored by the city government. And it has one of the insurance companies that has kicked in quite a bit of money toward helping put this thing together. So we've got some corporate sponsors, and we've got the politicians and city government sponsoring it. And the idea of the seminar is to start discussing the implications of the war on drugs and its failure, and how much money is being spent by cities in order to implement a totally failed policy.
Okay, we're about time to wrap it up here. I do urge you to visit the site of the Marijuana Policy Project. They are working on your behalf. There's some good stuff you could learn there, and please go to mpp.org. Next week, our guest here will be Dr. Stanton Peel, and it'll be Phil Smith, our and anyway, my friends, we do have to wrap it up. I urge you to keep in mind that you are the solution. There is no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact, moral clarity, no reason whatsoever for the drug war to continue. Please do your part to help bring it to an end in prohibition.org.
I want to advise those out there that are auditioning Century of Lies and Cultural Baggage that in the coming weeks, I'll be filing reports from a symposium sponsored by the city of Hartford, Connecticut, then participating in the Wonders of Cannabis event in San Francisco, and filing a report from the Drug Policy Alliance Conference in Long Beach, California. We're working to educate. The end of prohibition is awaiting your action. Prohibido istak ivalesco. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Dean Becker asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Our engineer, Philip Guffman.